Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. This week we are continuing to read Black Brick. Last week we read... Little things about my Sam Schiever identity jumped out that had seemed trivial before. Sam's father had been killed in the Second Gulf War, and his mother had committed suicide shortly after that. I had remembered thinking at the time that the analyst writing this had an active imagination and should have considered a career as a novelist. As I reread Sam Schiever's past with fresh eyes, I realized that the setup had been a long time in coming. It was that, where all the Black Brick cover stories were laid out with enough details that could point to frustration with the government in case one of Beltran's people had to be set loose. I guess that made more sense. I finished the article and searched for more. At present, there was very little known about Sam Schiever. I had a feeling that would change in a big way. I packed up my stuff and made sure to leave a decent tip. I did not want to be remembered for being too generous or cheap. All I needed was to be forgotten. I had only made it several blocks before a realization set in. How long would it be before the train accident and mall bombing were traced back and blamed on me? I had to force myself to keep walking. How long would it be before every law enforcement officer in the U.S. would be on the lookout for me? Every grade school student in the world knew my face, and every news pundit calling for my head. And now? 28. It was idiotic to return to Kingstone University so soon after everything had gone down. Leaving the country and never returning would have been the smart thing to do. Moving to an obscure part of the U.S. and living in the woods would have been better. But returning, hoping to find answers or a way to set things right, was not the brightest idea. I had been used, and I was not going to let Beltran get away with it. In order to do that, I needed to find Chris. If she did not work for the government, she might be the only friend in the world that I had right now. It had almost been 2 weeks since the assassination of Elaine Vargo, and I was certain that the classes should have returned to normal by now. I timed my arrival at the George Washington building to coincide with the end of Peck's history class. As I waited for the class to end, I looked around, expecting to see police officers or easily recognizable government men swarming all over the place. But instead, I found things to be pretty much normal. I sat on a bench, pulled out my tablet, and turned it on, but only pretended to use it while I kept an eye on the door to the classroom. Thor passed by, chatting with several people. I'd never paid much attention to the little runt, but with the warmer weather, he was not wearing a coat, and I realized now he was in good shape, and had an air of confidence about him that I had not noticed before. Was his interest in me a coincidence, or something more? Did he work for Chris? Was he a federal agent? As Thor disappeared, I wondered if I had underestimated the little man. I should have been more careful about brushing him off all those times he tried to befriend me. Shannon passed but did not recognize me. It made me glad that my disguise was thorough, but it was tough seeing her again, and I had to refrain from staring. I was reminded of all the time we'd spent together, and I had to suppress my desire to chase after and confront her. When I spotted Chris, I followed after, hoping that she would be done with class for the day. I was disappointed when she headed into another building. Cursing, I followed her into a large auditorium and took a seat in the back where I could keep an eye on her. I resisted the urge to pull out my tablet as the lecture started. Kingstone had a guest Wi-Fi internet option that I could hop onto, but I could not afford to be distracted. The class turned out to be a biological lecture. As the professor droned on, I noticed that dear old Professor Henry Peck was sitting a few rows away. This was not surprising. It was common for professors to attend lectures given by their peers. Even with my disguise, I had subconsciously ducked down. I straightened up. Peck would not recognize me if Shannon had not. Once class was over, Chris left campus and headed towards a parking lot. I had not planned on her having a vehicle because I'd figured that she lived in one of the nearby apartment buildings. I had planned on following her home, but now that she was about to get into a car, that plan went out the window. I did not want to risk another unnecessary trip to campus, so I sped up. Chris turned and smiled as I approached. Cursing to myself, I slowed down, wondering how she'd known until I noticed that she'd been on the phone. As she put it back in her pocket, I refrained from looking around to try and find her backup. "Who do you work for?" I asked. I could not believe that any federal agent would let one of the most wanted men in America approach without taking defensive measures, and I assumed that I didn't have much time before her backup would feel the need to intervene. "You're stupid for coming here," she said, "and as usual, you've managed to add to your trail of destruction since I last saw you." She paused and met my eyes. "Did you kill Vargo?" "I was set up," I said. Chris nodded and looked around. "I believe you." Even though I should have felt comforted by that, I did not because of the agitation in her voice. "How long before your backup gets here?" "They won't approach unless you do something to worry them," she said. "Are you working with Thor?" I asked, watching for any sign of surprise or deceit. Chris gave me a puzzled look. She was either a very good actor or genuinely curious. "Are you talking about that boy from class?" She shook her head. "Why do you suspect him?" "Other than you, he's the only person here to ever reach out to me. You had ulterior motives. Why should he be any different?" "He's probably just a student," she said. "Luckily enough for you, I and my employer are the only ones who know about your fascination with me." I sputtered. "My fascination with you? You're the one who's been stalking me for months." Chris smiled, and I realized that she was teasing. I had not been in that kind of mood for quite some time and was taken aback. I suppose that life had not been as intense for Chris as it had been for me recently. "You're just as much of a criminal as I am," I said. "I've done some digging, and you're not government." "I never said that my employer was the government." She smiled. "I don't think of myself as a criminal as much as I do a philanthropist. Besides, you don't really want to compare crimes, do you?" I thought not. I almost turned and left. It took every ounce of self-control I had to stay. I needed help, and she was the only person I could turn to. "My boss is very interested in working with you," she said, "which is saying something because you come with considerable baggage." Chris opened her bag and handed me a folder. "This is a sign of good faith. My boss has been able to dig up a few things that you may find interesting." My number's written inside. "Please don't be stupid enough to come back here again." Chris turned to go, but I grabbed her arm. "What does your boss want from me?" "He's just an old guy who's trying to make the world a better place." "Does Martinez work for you?" Chris rolled her eyes but shook her head. "Not everybody is out to get you, Jake." She left. I stuffed her folder into my bag and walked away, careful to try and spot her backup. Because I was concerned they might follow me, I took a circuitous route back to my motel room that took the better part of the afternoon. As much as I'd been tempted to examine the contents of the folder while I was in transit, I resisted. The last time she had given me something, it had included evidence of a mass murderer. I did not want to risk somebody looking over my shoulder, so I did not open the folder until later in the evening when I was back at my motel. My room was exactly as I had left it. I'd done the usual things of leaving behind small, innocuous details that would have been disturbed if anybody had entered the room. A small hair here, a bit of dust there, a few crumbs on my laptop. I was relieved that nothing was out of place because I needed to rest. Even though the day had not been physically demanding, remaining on constant alert while traveling around had taken its toll, not to mention the stress of fearing for my life every step of the way. Once I finished checking for signs of intrusion, I removed the folder, put my bag on the dresser, and sat down on the mattress. The springs squeaked from my weight, and I sighed. The air was dank and musty, and I did not want to know the last time the carpet had been shampooed. But I felt safer than I had all afternoon. I'd soon move on. It was the fifth room I had rented in the last couple of weeks. I had not stayed more than 3 nights at any one place. This was my second night, and tomorrow I would pick a place on the other side of the city. I opened the folder and found there were some pictures. The first was of my mother. Surprised, I flipped to the next, hoping for a picture of my father as well, but it was another of her. After my parents had died and I had been whisked away, I was not left with any pictures of my family. Tears started to form in my eyes, and I blinked them back. It was not until the fifth picture that I realized something was wrong. My mother looked much older than I remembered her. The next sent my head spinning. She had gray hair. My memories were fuzzy, but I was certain that she had not gone gray by the time she had died. I stopped on a picture of her walking arm in arm with a man who was not my father. The two of them were at the beach and looked very happy. So many questions tumbled through my mind that I had to close the folder to think. My mother was not alive. I had seen her die. I stopped cold. That was not exactly correct. I had walked into the room after she had been shot. She had been on the bed with blood spilling out of her side, a blank look on her face. The man that had killed her stood off to the side and had not noticed me. After that, I had run into my father's study, grabbed his revolver, and killed him. The other man, the man I'd previously believed to be Stanley Redder, had disarmed and bound me, which was where the police had found me. When they'd taken me away, she might have still been breathing. Why would Chris have given me this? What was she doing? Were these photos doctored? Was she bringing back my past to further break me? I paused and took a breath, then another and another. The big question dancing around in my mind, teasing and taunting me. I was afraid to face it, but I had no choice. What if my mother was still alive? That night outside the club, Chris had said my mother had been kidnapped. Unwittingly, I had corrected her and not thought about it again. I picked up the folder and flipped through the rest of the pictures. There were several more with her, the man, and the children. Were these hers, or did she adopt again? I had to stop from crumpling them. They looked like an ideal family. A family like mine had been, before it had been destroyed. At the back, on the inside of the folder, was a brief note from Chris with her phone number. Cursing, I turned on the television, which was already set to a news channel, and went to the bathroom. I needed to think about something else. When I came out, I was surprised to hear my voice coming from the television. It was a video recording of my conversation with Peck, taken the day that we'd been talking about U.S. policy. I had not even suspected that there was somebody taping the conversation. Peck asked me if I believed if the U.S. should have a secret policy of assassination. My response to his question sounded far away. Why not? Why should soldiers sacrifice their lives because of disagreements among idiot politicians? Balling my hands into fists, I watched as the tape finished playing and the screen switched back to a panel of talking heads. I muted the television because I did not need them to tell me how that had come off. In light of the accusations and evidence against me, the tones and words of that conversation came off as anti-American, not to mention the fact that I was being accused of assassination. My words would have the news pundits raising a voice of warning about me targeting high-profile politicians. I don't know how long I had been staring at the screen when Shannon's face popped up. I turned up the volume. The caption underneath identified her as Jessica, the girlfriend of Sam Schieber. "How long did you date Mr. Schieber?" the newswoman asked. The screen was split, and it was clear that Shannon was being recorded from a separate location. "We were off and on for a while," Shannon said. "Has Sam tried to contact you?" "No, he has not. The day of the assassination, he kissed me goodbye, and I did not see him again. I never had any suspicion that he was up to something. In retrospect, I guess there were signs. I'd never thought much about some of the things he had said until afterward. The recording that Professor Peck shared with us earlier has reminded me of other things that Sam said. Nothing real telling, just statements in passing." The tape had come from Peck? I had just figured that it had been a student in class who had managed to catch the discussion using their cell phone. That was surprising and bothersome. What was Peck's angle? Why release this? "What did he say?" the anchorwoman asked. "Oh, just little things. Like the government had become corrupt and could not be trusted. How he wished we'd stop involving ourselves in wars that we did not belong in. But I've got to be honest, other people talk like that, but they don't go out and kill the brother of a senator. So, like I said, I'd never thought about it. It's all surreal. I still don't believe that this happened. Are you afraid he might seek revenge against you?" "No, I've been working with the FBI and chasing him down. They've promised to protect me. He's not going to get anywhere close to me." I snorted. I could have killed her after Peck's class if I'd wanted. The interview ended, and I had to restrain myself from throwing the television across the room. They were trying to bait me. I was not supposed to have escaped. Beltran and Peck wanted me to get caught. They had probably planned on me getting killed by the police. Either way, they would have their scapegoat. I flipped through the channels and stopped when I recognized Peck. I was not surprised to see him taking advantage of the limelight. "It is a tragedy of the highest order. What a waste all the way around," Peck said. "Mr. Schieber was one of my brightest students. Mr. Varga was well-liked and respected. Professor Peck, why are you only coming forward now with this recording?" To be honest, the conversation with Sam slipped my mind. In fact, it's a coincidence that I found this at all. Finals are coming up, and in preparation I like to review my lecture tapes. "Did Mr. Schieber have help pulling this off?" the anchorwoman asked. "Or do you think he did this alone?" "I don't know. The FBI has been more interested in asking me questions than giving me answers." Peck smiled. It looked practiced and fake, like a politician. How had I never noticed that before? If you're asking me if Sam was smart enough to do this by himself, the answer is yes. However, I doubt that was the case. I have spent a considerable amount of time studying domestic terrorist groups. This reeks of their involvement. This is indicative of a bigger problem than just Sam. For many years, there has been a growing movement of extremists that are fed up with the politicians on both sides of the aisle. Their main argument is that it does not matter if the elected official is coming from a conservative or liberal perspective. The government becomes increasingly bloated and out of touch. Of course, we all know that this is largely not true. Are there corrupt officials? Absolutely. Is that the general rule? Of course not. But I'm afraid that unless something is done quickly, that these will be the first of many incidents. A chill ran through me. Why had I not seen it before? Peck had set me up. That tape had not just been a coincidence. Peck had chosen to single me out in class and recorded the conversation for a reason. Was Peck going to run for office? On another topic, the anchorwoman said, I understand you're being considered to replace Vargo as CEO of Diagon. Would you care to comment? What? I said aloud to an empty room. Maybe it was not about politics at all. Had Beltran been targeting Diagon so that Peck could take over? Peck's smile became somber. I'd prefer to not comment on that. Vargo was a close personal friend of mine. The interview ended, and I muted the television. The coincidences had piled on. The house of cards that Peck had so elaborately spent years building was tumbling down, but I was the only one that could see it. It all came back to Peck. I paced as I tried to think. Peck had done this on purpose. He had as good as painted a target on himself. Did he want me to come after him? How would that further his agenda? I paced for hours until my legs began to hurt. By the end, I was tired of hiding. I needed to act. Finally, just as the sun was coming up, I decided on a plan. It was time that my story was heard. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.